Idaho.
I miss him so much. He's just so funny. Whenever you were down, he just made you laugh. I just miss him.
Fighting for you.
The situation this past 2 years has been extremely difficult. It's taught us a lot about patience and trusting God. And we're just beginning to realize the amazing hidden blessings that God has brought through this crisis.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Joining us now, Dr. Paul Ruggieri, the author of Cost Cutting, A Surgeon Reveals the Truth Behind a Multi-Billion Dollar Industry. Dr. Ruggieri, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're a practicing surgeon.
Correct.
And you want to reveal the truth behind the curtain. What gives?
Public needs to know the truth about a lot of things in life, particularly in medicine, particularly in surgery. They need to be educated about what's going on so they can themselves make good decisions on choosing a surgeon and where to have their operation.
Well, I mean, we're all so squeamish about going into surgery. What really goes on?
Well, most of the time, surgery goes very well. You know, surgery is very effective, very successful in this country in helping a lot of people's ailments. And sometimes it doesn't go well. But there are influences, business influences, today than no other time in our history that affect who you may see as a surgeon, where you may have your operation. In the end, that may ultimately affect your health care.
Well, Dr. Ruggieri, how long have you been practicing?
22 years.
And what are the changes that you've seen in the last 22 years?
Well, there's been a lot of changes. I mean, just from a surgical standpoint, the beginning of laparoscopic minimally invasive surgery has changed the dynamics greatly. Patients have benefited from smaller incisions, smaller surgeries. On the business side, there's been some dramatic changes, as you know, particularly from the Affordable Care Act, that's created an environment, particularly, that makes it very difficult for independent practitioners like myself to be competitive and compete with hospital systems.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that when we're talking about the impacts of Obamacare on our health system.
From my perspective, the Affordable Care Act has really stimulated an environment where hospitals, seeing they're going to be getting less federal money for Medicare patients, are buying up practices, surgeons' practices, specialty practices. They're buying up smaller hospitals. They're trying to really corner the market on their consumers who consume their services. And as an independent practitioner, they are competing directly with me for patients, and they're able to control their patients and generate as much revenue as they can from every stop of that patient along the way to the operating room.
And what does that mean when for the consumer?
Well, it can mean you may not have a great choice in choosing who your surgeon is. If your regular doctor is an employee of a hospital system, guess where that regular doctor is going to send you to? He's going to send you to a surgeon who's employed by that hospital system. And in communities, you may have some other surgeons who have more experience in particular operations that you may never get to see.
And that is a tough part. A lot of people say, you know, I want to keep my doctor. I want to keep my health plan. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be the case.
Generally, it's not going that way. No, it's not. And patient choice, I believe, has really been compromised by a lot of this. Unless you really speak up, and if you speak up and have a voice for your own health care, you still will have a choice. But many patients are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to say things that may anger their doctors or that may go against what their doctor recommends.
And why do they? Why are they afraid?
Well, I think it's just been that way for a long, long time. I mean, the doctor has the white coat. They're the ones with the expertise. And most people trust their doctors as well as they should. But today there's influences outside of just practicing good medicine that affect where patients are going and where they're operated on.
Has it gotten worse? Have we gone from the non-caring HMO bureaucrats to the non-caring government bureaucrats?
Oh, in some ways we have. No question about that. The bureaucracy is much bigger. Unfortunately, you know, physicians really they've lost control of their independence for a lot of reasons. And they're kind of just cogs in the big wheel.
You think that's going to impact people going into medicine?
You would think it would. You know, it's interesting. It did initially, but medical school applications are up, believe it or not. And I think they're up because as a doctor or a specialist or a surgeon, you'll have a good job. You'll always have a decent living. Healthcare, that's where the growth is. So I think people are still going into medicine, but certain specialties, there's a shortage, like in my specialty, for instance, in surgery. Many of the surgical subspecialties are not filling, and that could be a problem with patient access.
Although you do have to wonder about the student loan debt you have to take out.
Well, unfortunately, it is a problem. I mean, the average medical student graduating today has a total cumulative debt. It's in six figures easily.
I have a friend of mine, his son is going into residency over $350,000 already.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, that would have been me unless I spent 3 years in the military. They paid for 3 years of my education, so that would have been me otherwise.
So that won't dissuade people. Of course, the growth going into healthcare. What about the idea of, you know, getting sued all the time? That's got to impact medicine as well.
Well, you know, it does. Unfortunately, it's the cost of doing business. I mean, I've been at it for long enough that it's something that is part of our business. I mean, most states mandate you have malpractice insurance. Certain states don't. They're very few. But that money paying malpractice insurance comes right off the top. I mean, it can range from anywhere from $40,000 to a couple $100,000, depending on the specialty you're in. You know, it's there. There's nothing you can do about it.
The cost of cutting, a surgeon reveals the truth behind a multi-billion dollar industry. Dr. Paul Ruggieri with us, Kevin Miller in the morning at 580KIDO. What about the whole business side? You know, people will go in and seem to have major surgery. You know, they put them on the table, and then they're out the door within 24 hours because the insurance will only pay so much. What impact does that have on healing?
Well, you know, a lot of surgery has evolved to that. I do a lot of outpatient minimally invasive surgery, and it's safe. It's effective. It's taken us decades to get to this point. So a lot of that surgery is safe clinically. Now, on the insurance side, of course, yeah, insurance companies don't want you to stay in the hospital because it costs a lot of money for someone to stay in the hospital. So they are pushing you to get out of the hospital. Hospitals are pushing you to get out of their hospital because it costs them money if you stay. And particularly with today's environment, there's only so many healthcare dollars to go around in the private sector and on the federal level.
Isn't that what you pay for insurance, though?
You would think. I know. Right. Well, it's like any insurance. You pay for insurance, and when you actually need it, how much do you get? Most surgery today is done on an outpatient basis, particularly what I do, and it is safe. It's safe and it's effective if it's done correctly. Now, there are other operations that people need to stay in the hospital for. But the push today is to get people out of the hospital because it costs money. Beds cost money when they're filled in the hospital.
What should people listening right now at 580KIDO know about before they consider going under the knife?
Well, I think they need to find out, first of all, who their surgeon is and how experienced their surgeon is. They need to find out from if they were referred to a particular surgeon based on expertise, based on experience, based on a relationship between the primary care doctor and that surgeon, not just based on a financial employment agreement that both work for the same hospital system. And it's automatic you go to the surgeon who works for the hospital system, regardless of knowing their outcomes. Patients need to be aware of that. They can ask questions. They can ask their primary care doctor, why are you sending me to this particular surgeon? Is it because you know of good outcomes? You have a good relationship? Are there other surgeons that you can refer me to that have more experience? Patients really have to ask questions right up front, and then when they get to a surgeon, they have to ask even more questions about their experience. So how many of these operations do you do a week, a month, a year? Practice makes perfect, even in surgery.
On the other hand, people might be intimidated because they don't want to anger this guy that's going to.
Well, that's true. But you know, they got to get over that, because if you're a doc or a surgeon gets angry, I would go find another surgeon. I would get another opinion.
Can you do that?
Opinions are very good.
Can you do that in today's world of, hey, you're in this system, get in there and get it done?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there you can probably see another surgeon in the same system. Won't cost you any more. But if you go outside that network, that system, it's going to cost you more. That's the trade-off. They tell you have a choice. You can see whoever you want to see. In reality, that's not the case.
How has the Affordable Care Act made the situation worse?
Well, I think it's made it worse in the sense that many of these network exchanges that people are getting, these health insurance on the networks, they're very narrow networks. There's only a certain percentage of physicians in this country, specialists, who want to participate in those networks. And patients, you know, their choice is limited. Their choice really is limited. So I think in that regard, those networks aren't very favorable to physicians as far as paying them. So that's why they're not appealing to a lot of docs in this country. They don't want to be part of it.
And right.
That's becoming more and more evident. Recent studies have shown this. So patients have only a choice of the physicians who want to participate in these health exchanges. And maybe these physicians don't have the best experience, particularly the surgeons, at some of these operations. But they're never going to know that.
Hmm. Anything else you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I think patients need to be advocates for their own health care. They really have to speak up from the beginning of the process. From the time they step into a doctor's office to the time they get to see a surgeon, they need to just ask questions and find out, you know, why am I seeing this person? What's going on? Bring somebody with you. Take some notes. Do some research before you even step into a surgeon's office. You can go on the Internet. The Internet's good and bad, but there are some things that can prompt some questions. You can't just sit back and let the system push you along the way. You need to question things along the way. And second opinions, get a second opinion. If there's any doubt in your mind, if you're unhappy with what you hear, get a second opinion.
You're not going to hurt anybody's feelings.
No. And who cares if you do? Who cares?
I don't know. You guys have long memories.
Well,
doctor,
it shouldn't hurt anybody's feelings. Most people I work with would be happy to send their patients for a second opinion. They'll get on the phone. And eventually what happens is those patients come back to see you for their surgery because they trust you because you sent them for another opinion. The opinion was correct, and they'll come back to you.
Dr. Ruggieri, the cost of cutting a surgeon reveals the truth behind a multi-billion-dollar industry. Thank you, sir.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. We hope you enjoyed our great friend, Dr. Paul Ruggieri. Coming up, Jeff Bacon and the Wyakin Warriors, why it's important to you to support our troops right here at 580 KIDO.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO. Joining us now with Kevin Miller is our great friend Jeff Bacon of the Wyakin Warrior Project. It has been a while, sir.
Yes, sir. Good morning,
Kevin.
What
have you been up to, brother?
Well, we've been busy. We're still plugging along and keeping the Wyakin Warrior program going.
Well, we've got a big event coming up, and we've heard a lot about it here at 580KIDO. But for those folks that aren't familiar with it, we had a young lady the other day who sent me an email and saying, "Why are you promoting the Wiccans?" And I said, "No, it's Wyakin." And, you know, having had the honor of being around with you for quite some time, and she was very serious about it. If you could explain the name and the significance, sir.
Thank you. The Wyakin is a Native American term. It originated with the Nez Perce tribe, and it is a rite of passage for young Nez Perce members. They're taken out into the forest and left there without food, water, or weapons, and they stay there until they get their vision quest or their vision of their guardian spirit, which is a Wyakin. Wyakin translates to guardian spirit in the Nez Perce language. We thought that was a nice metaphor for what we try to do with the Wyakin Warrior Program.
And this is a unique program locally that is getting a lot of national attention, Jeff.
Yes, sir. One of our major partners is the USO. They named us best in class in the country and have partnered with us. And several other organizations around the country see this as a model that might be exported to other parts of the country. We found that it's been pretty effective. Nationally, the averages are kind of daunting for young veterans. You hear about unemployment rates, but if you look into the statistics, 18 to 24-year-old veterans around the country are only being employed at about 60%. So it's, and check that, 40%. 60% are not working. That's a combination of unemployment and dropping out of the workforce altogether, which is a stunning figure to us. And also, if they go on to college, they have about a 50% chance of finishing. And what we're finding, the Wyakan Warriors that go into our program are graduating at right now 100%, those who stay in the program. And our overall retention in the program is 96%. So it's kind of busting the statistics. And those who do graduate are going out and getting career jobs, which is what we're looking for.
Well, indeed. And who do we have with us?
Sitting next to me is Misha Brady. Misha is a Boise resident, a Bishop Kelly graduate, joined the Marine Corps, and has been on a couple of deployments to Iraq. He's a Wyakan Warrior, and I hope we get a chance to have him tell some of his story.
Well, Misha, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Jeff covered most of it. I'm an Idaho native, born and raised here in Boise, Idaho. I was in the Marine Corps. I was in the initial pushes in 2003, and I was also in the Anbar region on the Syrian-Iraq border at the Al-Qaim border crossing in 2004. I'm a history major. I have an associate's degree in history. I'll be graduating this May with a bachelor's in history.
Well, congratulations. What does the Wyakan Warrior Project, the Warriors, mean to you?
Wyakan gave me something to kind of help me keep focused in school, whereas when I initially got out, I had a hard time focusing with a traumatic brain injury and PTSD, and sometimes when you're getting your meds and stuff taken care of, you're kind of all over the place emotionally wise, this place gives you, I shouldn't say place, but the Wyakan Warrior Program gives you what a lot of the vets are looking for, which is a stable place, and it's, it puts you on a plan so that you can work towards something, and it keeps you it regulates you to keep you up every day of the week, that you have something to do, and keeps you on that program and keeps you on that path so that you will succeed, whereas you're not going to fall off and start going astray, which I tried doing that on my own, and that's what happened. So I failed out once, and then I got back, and now I've, rebuilt my grades up. My GPA is better, and, I'm looking at graduating, where before it was just I kept hitting that brick wall.
Jeff, how is the Wyakan Warriors different from other support groups?
Well, for one thing, it's a long-term commitment. I used the word covenant the other day, and I think that's pretty appropriate for what we do. When we accept a veteran into the Wyakan Warrior Program, it's a lifelong commitment for us. And initially, the goal is to help them and enable them to get through school, and like Misha said, to stay focused and get into a career field. And then that commitment continues on for the rest of their lives. And we feel very strongly about that. I feel the same way that you do, that these young men and women have so much potential. And when I get to be an older man, I want these men and women running my country. I want them running my community because they have a context and an understanding that most of us don't have. I mean, I spent 26 years in the military and nobody ever shot at me. But Misha has seen things that nobody else has seen. So when he makes his decisions in all the years ahead of him, those are going to be decisions that have some sort of context that I think are important for us to know.
Let me ask both of you here at 580KIDO. For most of us, we're out, we're back. We still have a lot of troops deployed. Shed light on what's going on with the people that have served and how we're really not done helping. We're not done serving.
Misha, do you want to try that one?
A lot of things when we come back, it's what the program's great for. Like it gives you that structure, which is what most veterans thrive on. That's, and when you're in the military, that's every day is structured out for you. When you come back and you get out, with all the guys I've talked to. And even my guys that I served with, when you come back, it's like going on from like a dirt road, and then all of a sudden you get onto a super highway, and everything's just going back and forth past you real quick, and you just can't. It's too much. You get overwhelmed. This keeps that structure for you and keeps you focused on what you need to be focusing, and makes that ingrains that in you so that you're looking at that in every situation. So, and then if you falter and you have an issue, which happens, because, you know, everybody has a day that's in the military or that's served overseas that are hard days for us. Veterans Day, Memorial Day. Mine's April 17th. I lost a bunch of guys on that day. So, you know, I have hard days. You know, the week up to those days are rough for us. And they keep a support group. That's the main thing. A lot of vets will come back. They may not have family. They don't have that support group. This program and a lot of other programs, well, they give that support group. And I think with all of them together, working together, that forms a great, you know, comfort area for those veterans where otherwise they just, you know, they become homeless or they, you know, they get fired from jobs. They can't have jobs. They get, you know, problems with the, you know, the law and breaking the law and all that kind of stuff where this, it takes all that negative energy, puts it into good energy, and sets it to a right path to make them successful.
More coming up next here. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO, the Wyakin Warriors, as we continue on, the Wyakin Warrior Foundation. Jeff Bacon with us. Misha Bradley with us as well. Misha Brady, there we go. Wanted to make sure I was squared away. It's been a while, Misha. And by the way, thank you both for your service. Talk a little bit about the Wyakin Warrior Ball. I mean, for you, Jeff, it is something that you really love. You work behind the scenes year-round. Such a festive atmosphere, but a lot of planning.
A lot of planning. It's the Guardian Ball, I guess roughly named after Wyakin and as a guardian spirit. The Guardian Ball is our big black tie event. We've added an induction ceremony this year. Normally what we've done is had an induction ceremony halfway through the year, and then we have the Guardian Ball as kind of a celebration and fundraiser for the
organization.
Usually
it's a cold day, too.
Yes, that's right. That's right. This year we're combining the two of them, so the night will be special because we have seven new Wyakin Warriors that are coming into the program, and they're going to be on stage. The existing Wyakin Warriors, those who are already in the program, are going to be the ones that welcome them in with their Wyakin letter jackets.
Sure.
Welcome into the program. But the Guardian Ball is a black tie event. It's very festive. We consider it not only a fundraiser but also a training evolution. A lot of these guys have never worn tuxedos before. We put them into tuxedos. Misha wore a top hat, if I remember right, last year. And
that's an experience.
It was something I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. but it's an opportunity for each of the Wyakin Warriors to host a table, to learn some of the social etiquette that is not military, and understand.
It sounds like work, Jeff.
It's a little bit of work, but it sets you up for success because
sure.
Every business luncheon they're going to be watching you. So that's going to give you a step up above anybody else because they're going to look at you and go, wow. Mm-hmm. I could send him out into public in a luncheon with a new prospective client, and he's not going to fail me, and, you know, he's not going to be looking all terrible.
Sure. You've got the top hat. You'll be good.
That's right. And I also consider, you know, for example, we're sitting here in your studio. The next time that Misha goes out and has an opportunity to be on air, he's done this before now. He's not as intimidated. He's, you know, they've had a chance to, most of them have had a chance to meet the governor and meet congressmen or senators. And so as they get out into the world, they've done these things. They've done a black tie event. They know how to put on a tuxedo, and they know which fork to use. You know, each year before the Guardian Ball, we have a training session with them to learn all the dining skills that you need in a formal setting.
Heck yeah, which fork to use and stuff like that. Let me hit you with the fun stuff, though. What about the cartoonists and the entertainment?
Oh, geez, I almost forgot the cartoonists.
Come on, Jeff.
And I'm a cartoonist.
I know. That's your labor of love. Come on.
That's right. Each year we bring in the cartoonists. The cartoonists have a big part of this organization because it was created out of USO trips where we've gone out and visited the troops. So each year a lot of these cartoonists who have been overseas – come to the Guardian Ball in support of the organization. So this year we have caricaturists from Mad Magazine. We have, in fact, the news editor or the art director from Mad Magazine is going to be here, Sam Viviano, the president of the National Cartoonist Society. We've got Pearls Before Swine, In the Bleachers, Lola, some of the local cartoonists here, The Simpsons. So it's a real great time, and we're really concentrating on putting the cartoonists on center stage this year. So when the guests first come in, cartoonists will be sitting at tables. You can go right up to them and ask for an autographed caricature, an autographed character from their strips. It's great Christmas presents, that sort of thing. And then at the end of the ball, they'll be doing the same thing. And we also have a couple of surprises during the evening with cartoon themes that the guests, I think, will have a great time with. So they're a hoot. Those guys are great.
What about, on a serious issue, the state of Veterans Affairs? You know, we have this program here, but, you know, whether we hear about the scandals and such, but for folks that have served like Misha and others, Jeff, you and the folks at the Wycombe Warriors take care of them, but there's such a need and it's ignored.
Well, and coupled with the fact, I think a lot of the country doesn't even know we're at war anymore. And so the attention span, I think, for the country has been relatively short. But the VA, you know, we're blessed here. We have a great VA system here in the Treasure Valley, one of the best in the country. I was just out in D.C. and was talking with the leadership at the VA, and they acknowledge that. The vocational rehabilitation counselors we have here, the hospital that we have here, are some of the best in the country. We're blessed. But there is a great need around the country. Hundreds of thousands of veterans are coming back and experiencing some of the stuff that Misha just talked about, where it's kind of this surreal environment. In the old days, there'd be a troop transport where you'd get on a ship and you'd be out processing. It'd take a month or two to kind of transition back into society. Nowadays, you get on a plane, and 14 hours later, you're sitting at
sure.
Dulles or something.
Let me ask Misha. Misha, what are you hearing from the folks you served with as far as the need to help veterans to support them?
I know all the guys that I've served with, in one capacity or another, have actually gone into a field that they wanted to do, but it went to supporting veterans. I got trained on how to do kind of VSO, veteran service officer stuff, and on my free time, just to keep up on it, I've helped quite a few people through like my VFW and things like that, just to kind of, I didn't understand how the system worked, so I was fortunate enough to get in a program that I could learn how the system works, so now I can sit and explain it to them, and then they better know, and they can get through the system better, which in turn is going to help the system, because now they understand what the process is to get it done, and you're not going to have all these claims coming back and forth trying to get
sure.
it fixed.
But I guess on the personal side, the problems that you're hearing on the ground level as far as PTSD, TBI, and other issues, sir?
Everything's been going pretty well. I had a few hiccups in the system when I was in. It took me a little while to get my TBI rating. But the best thing is you got to keep pushing at it. And the only way you're going to fix something if there's an issue is to keep pushing at it and to keep giving them a reason to fix it. If a lot of times what happens is vets will get frustrated and they won't continue to try getting that treatment. And so they'll go back to their house and they'll just never go back to the VA again. That's not how to fix, you know, you got to be proactive to fix the system. So we're very fortunate here. I've had great experiences here. I've lived in Florida for a year, and theirs was a little different than ours. I'm biased because I'm from here, so I think ours is better.
Right.
Yeah, those are just the hiccups. Sometimes you get people that are working that they're there for a job, and it needs to be about the veteran.
Right.
That is your job.
Jeff, we take a look at, you've talked to folks in the veterans community. You know, this is a challenge that we're going to be helping and supporting and fighting for quite some time. I don't think the public understands, you know, you just don't throw somebody in there after they served and throw them back here and say, good luck.
That's right. Did you know that if someone leaves active duty, the local authorities here don't even know that they've come back to the state unless they happen to check in with the VA system? That's what I was one of the things I wanted to talk about when I went back to D.C. The governor and the congressional delegation here have supported an idea of a better way of transferring information between Department of Defense and the VA, especially the, for example, here in the Idaho Division of Veteran Services, so that they know when a veteran comes into the state. It's a big challenge because of the numbers of veterans that are coming back. And, you know, the group that we concentrate on are those who are severely wounded and injured and the Purple Heart recipients. But that's just a fraction of all of the veterans that are coming back to the state. And they all have a lot of the same experiences where it's kind of a surreal environment and it's pretty daunting with the VA system because it's a big system. Luckily, we do have a really good program here with the VA, and we have a good, we in the Wyack and Warrior program have a good relationship with the VA, so we try to, you know, make sure that, that our Wyack and Warriors can get their speed bumps taken care of, you know, so they can continue to focus on that education, because statistics will show that you have about a twice as good a chance of getting employment if you have a degree than if you don't have a degree. So we think that's a big part of the equation for successful careers. And if there is a challenge that jumps in, whether it's, you know, medical or physical or emotional or whatever, if we can get those things pushed to the side so they can continue to focus on their education, they have a better chance of graduating.
More coming up next. You're listening to Kevin Miller. Five.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
You're having a great day. We are here talking to the Wyack and Warriors, the Wyack and Warrior Foundation. Our friend Jeff Bacon with us. You're El Presidente now, huh?
El Presidente. Yeah, I keep getting pushed further and further away. That's what that means. It's a great organization. We've got several members on the staff here now, just hundreds of volunteers with the program. We consider ourselves a volunteer-based program because...
What's the website? Sorry.
It's thank you. It's wyakin.org, wyakin.org. And if you're interested in going to the Guardian Ball, which is coming up this Saturday, the 13th, you can go right to the website at wyakin.org, and it'll navigate you right to getting some tickets for the Guardian Ball.
And I urge people to do that. Misha Brady with us as we continue on. A Wyakin warrior, a man who served, Bishop Kelly grad, go Knights. A little smile to your face there. Let's talk a little bit about what service means to both of you. Jeff?
For me, because I'm retired, I've been retired now for about 9 years, service to me has changed. It used to be all about me, and I wanted to serve my country. I wanted to protect my family. Now that I'm retired, my service has moved to the veteran community, and just like you, I mean, you're my hero. You walk the walk. You go out and you know, you were at the wall when the wall was here. You go out and visit with the National Guard. You go overseas to war zones. The stuff that I've done with the cartoons, you know, going out on USO trips. Just got back from Afghanistan not too long ago.
What was that like?
It's pretty surreal. They're drawn down. It's very dangerous out there right now. I mean, imagine being the last couple of people at a FOB. And you know, the bad guys right outside the gates. It's pretty dangerous. We were there just after the general was killed, and it's a dangerous place. I've been to Iraq a couple times and Afghanistan, and this is the first time that I felt that I was in kind of a dangerous place.
And our troops are going through that. Misha, what about you?
My idea of service is was similar to Jeff's. Is when you're in, you know, I want to serve the country. You know, I want to do my part. And in transitioning and over the years and going through the struggles and stuff I've gone through, me and a lot of my other vets I feel the same, that we've transitioned back to pushing out and helping the veteran community to better help them have a better seamless transition than we did. So each time we keep improving the process, we keep pushing out and helping out other vets, because as a combat veteran, it's nice to have another combat veteran to talk to, because they can relate more to your, you know, your situation. Granted, everybody's situation is different, but there's similarities in it. There's that camaraderie, whether you were in different branches of service or not. It's just comforting to know that someone had been through similar things that you have, and that they're successful. So it gives them something to work towards.
Indeed. Finally, we've got about a minute and a half left. Gentlemen, Misha, where do you see yourself in a few years? Where would, what are your goals, sir?
My goal is to do either archival work or work as a veteran service officer.
All right.
We've had five graduates so far, and all of them are in career fields now. And we're Misha will be right there.
You're always looking for mentors.
Yes, sir. We have local mentors for the Warriors as they're going through school, but also professional mentors. And that is becoming a larger part of our program now because a lot of our, you know, the Warriors you saw when they first came in are now getting closer to graduation. So we're starting to network them. And the professional mentors are there to help them with that networking and getting into a career field. So, yeah, it's Misha's right on track. He's
ready to go.
Yeah, he was just talking about his professional mentor the other just a few minutes ago. And he's already getting some stuff lined up, so it'll be pretty exciting to watch him the next few years.
All right, once again, the ball?
Guardian Ball is coming up December 13th at the Boise Center, and you can get tickets at wyakin.org, W-Y-A-K-I-N.org, and hope to see you there. It'll be a lot of fun.
Folks, it's a great cause. It's a wonderful evening and incredible auction, great silent auction. It really goes to a wonderful cause. When we talk about what you can do for America, what you can do for Idaho, what you can do for the people that have stood up for you, why don't you go to wyakin.org, go to the Wyakin Warrior Foundation Ball this Saturday. Check it out. It will change your life. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO. Good morning, Dave. KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. We are expanding our social media presence. Would love you to give us a like, 580KIDO, KIDO AM Boise. Those are our Facebook posts, at 580KIDO on Twitter. And friend me, because gosh knows I need more friends. That's Kevin Miller on Facebook. Fox News is next. Stay here, stay informed. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Serving Emmett.